Welcome back to Chronicle Headlines. I'm your host, John McGowan, and we've got a couple stories this week. First off, some big Chicago news. I've got a guest in the studio with me today to talk about it. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Leah Love. I'm the news editor here at the Chronicle and here to talk about last night's election.
And how are you doing this week, Leah?
I'm tired,
yeah.
But I'm good.
Same here. So tell me about this story.
Yeah, well,
last
night was the 2023 municipal election. So on the ballot was the mayor, and all 50 aldermanic races were also going on. So the result was a runoff between Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson. Lori Lightfoot will not have a second term as mayor, which is kind of historic. It's the first time in...
like 40?
Yeah, 40 years that an incumbent mayor hasn't won. So
pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about that. I didn't pay so much attention to, like, all those so unimportant aldermanic races. Of course, I'm being, like, ironic. But what's the deal with those? Tell me about them, I guess.
Well, aldermen are considered kind of miniature mayors, so they have their smaller domain that they run in the city, and then there are members of the city council who, 50 members who report to the mayor, essentially, and work with the mayor.
Gotcha.
On legislation and laws, and also just kind of local things, like if you need, you know, trash picked up or potholes filled, the aldermen are kind of in charge of that.
And do you know who won the South Loop district? Alderman?
Yeah, so our loop, or the South Loop, is in the 4th Ward, which also covers Kenwood and Hyde Park and Bronzeville. That also went into a runoff. So with Chicago elections, you have to get over 50% of the vote in order to be considered the winner. And there were so many candidates in a lot of these races that nobody got to over 50%.
Right,
so that's
right.
Why we have the mayoral runoff, and then we're also having a runoff in the aldermanic race in the 4th Ward between, right now it's even in contention. So the person with the most votes, with 46% of the vote, was Lamont Robinson. He's a politician.
Definitely a politician.
Yeah, he's a politician. Yeah,
no worries.
And right now they're still kind of counting votes. So there's about over 1,000 vote-by-mail ballots that haven't been counted yet from the 4th Ward.
Gotcha.
And so the two people in second place are just really small margin between them two. So it's Prentice Butler and Ebony Lucas. One of them might make the runoff. We just don't know who
we'll
yet.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And so that's all well and good. Tell me a little bit about the candidates who are heading to the runoff for mayor.
Yeah, so we've got Paul Vallis, who won our biggest percentage of the vote, kind of as expected. He's former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. He has a long career kind of in education, administration, and politics. He ran in 2019 and lost to Lightfoot. He's running on a very strong kind of public safety, anti-crime campaign, and so that's been really popular with voters because public safety and crime is kind of the biggest issue going into this election. People are really worried about crime in Chicago. So he's vowed to, like, hire more beat cops, have more people out on the streets. He's been endorsed by the Fraternal Order of the Police, which is the police union here in Chicago. He's been really popular kind of with more centrist folks, but also kind of people leaning more Republican, conservative, even though he's kind of tried to distance himself from that whole situation.
While still staying very close to the police.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. His sons are both police officers.
Gotcha.
So he's very tight with them.
The other guy?
Brandon Johnson. He is a former public school teacher. He's an organizer with the CTU, the Chicago Teachers Union. And so he's had a lot of union support. He's kind of thought of as the progressive candidate. His thoughts on public safety are more oriented towards kind of root causes of crime, bolstering education, and also kind of trauma-informed care. And he supports treatment, not trauma, which focuses on kind of reopening the mental health centers here in Chicago rather than kind of putting more police on the streets, although he has said that he will try to promote more police officers within the department.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah.
And you said Vallis was also a public school guy?
Yeah, so he was the CEO of CTU, so he wasn't a teacher, but he was kind of in charge on a...
He was the CEO, and then the other guy was the teachers' union guy.
Yes.
That is so drama, dude.
Yeah, so they both have kind of roots in education.
Yeah, that's so funny that the two runoffs are... They beat Lori Lightfoot, who, you know, as we know, has not had a good history with Chicago Public Schools.
No, yeah. It's really interesting how they both have that same base, but in very different ways.
Yeah, and yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how people respond to that.
Yeah. And I saw that our Chronicle, Chronicle endorsement did not make it.
No, Cam Buckner got a very small percentage of the vote. It was just such a contentious race, though. You had 9 people in the running. Lots of people aren't going to... I don't think Buckner had the same kind of name recognition that kind of Vallis and Johnson did from their established bases. He didn't make
it. Yeah, it's tough. I was rooting for that guy. But I'm going to keep thinking about that drama. But I think that's all I had to ask. Is there anything else that you feel is important to add for this story?
I think it's really interesting that voter turnout has been so low in the city. It was under 35% last time in 2019, and it went down to like 32% this time around. So that's of all registered voters in the city, only 32% voted in this election.
Gotcha.
And then the youth vote was super low. So out of everyone who voted in this election, and it was about, I want to say around 500,000 votes, don't quote me on that, less than 4% of that was from people ages 18 to 24. So going into the April runoff, it'll be interesting to see if that changes, if candidates are going to try to campaign and get more of those votes, because it's a really untapped base, I think.
Yeah, not looking good for us 18
to 24s. No, not at all.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about it. Thank you so much for coming on, Leah.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
And we will turn it over to the next story. And we are back with another story. This one is pretty interesting. I'm excited to talk about it. And I've got a guest over Zoom to tell me about it. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Amina Sergazina, and I'm a senior reporter at the Columbia Chronicle.
And how are you doing today, Amina?
I'm doing great. I'm just a little bit sick, so don't mind me coughing. How are you?
Gotcha. I'm good. Excited to hear about the story. I was like really interested when I read the pitch. Tell me about it.
I was scrolling through LinkedIn, you know, looking at different posts, and then I see in my feed this post from Kirby Kalan about billboard that says, "I'm good at marketing. You're looking at my ad right now. Hire me." And I got really interested because I thought it was a real billboard. And I reached out to him. We had a little interview, and turns out the post, you know, it was kind of like just a Photoshop image of the billboard, but it got a lot of traction, and Kirby actually got his dream job out of it.
Yeah, and this is a Columbia student, right?
Yeah, he graduated in December, and actually it was not his original plan, but due to like family circumstances, he had to graduate earlier. So he was kind of thinking on his feet to find a job.
Right. And what did you learn from this guy? I do want to hear about the dream job that he got, but like, what did he say his motivations were in, you know, this like very like sort of guerrilla style of getting a job?
So he tried first like regular job hunting approach, like sending resumes and reaching out to people on LinkedIn. But you know, that process can be tiring, and he did not hear from many of them. So he decided to do this post kind of without really hoping for anything. And he said that he tried to create, you know, internet splashes before, but this is his first really successful one.
Yeah, so help me like track it. He made the billboard, and then I assume, you know, actually I do want to ask, how much did that cost to like rent this billboard to put his face on it?
So the billboard is not real.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. like the title says, you know, it's not real billboard. He just photoshopped it. He originally thought about putting a billboard, like physical billboard, but that costs like thousands and thousands of dollars. And, you know, he just graduated, had no money, like he cannot afford right. it. So he just decided to create like an internet post about it, and it got him a lot of traction, and it cost him nothing.
Okay, that's super interesting. And so what was the sort of follow-up to that, like how like viral did it go, and who ended up reaching out to him?
At the time that I posted the article and I interviewed Kirby, it got over 1700 likes, the first person who reached out to him was Mike Trevino. He's a founder and chairman of the digital marketing company called Revolver. He saw it through someone else reposting or liking that post. And he thought that was like very creative. He knew immediately like that the billboard was not real. He said that like he's looking for very unconventional people. And that's what his marketing team consists of. So he looked at Kirby's other, you know, work, his resume, and he said that like he just fitted his company. And right now, Kirby is working on marketing campaigns for brands like Intel.
That is insane. That's awesome. All from one LinkedIn post. You said he had tried other sort of like interesting posts like that before. Do you know of any of those?
I'm not sure about other posts, but he shared with me that his first idea was to do Google ads that target specifically people who are recruiters, but Google ads, like, they don't let you get like that specific. So, and also it costs a lot of money.
Right. Right. Well, man, that is so cool. I've just been like thinking about that since I heard about it. It's such an interesting way of, I guess like, you know, doing what you got to do to get the job, you know? I don't know. I think that's all I had. Is there anything else that you feel is important to add for this story?
Yeah. Kirby also mentions, a professor in Columbia, Susan Newman. She has a self-branding and marketing class. And he said that this class really helped him. And if you're in Colombia and you are trying to find a job, I guess, in a creative field, I think you should take this class.
Folks, you heard it from the billboard man himself. You should take the class. And I think that's it. Amina, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
And we will turn it over to the next story. And we are back with our final story of the day. This one is a problem relevant to a lot of students, and I've got a special guest in the studio to talk with me about it. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name's Vivian. I'm a reporter for The Chronicle.
And what is the story?
So basically the story is about students getting hit with unexpected costs, whether it be textbooks or art supplies or whatever material it is for a class that kind of wasn't prepared for. I noticed a lot this semester. I was hearing about students who purchased the textbooks and then they showed up and they had to get another one, or they had to get $200 worth of art supplies or sewing supplies that kind of just wasn't at all disclosed to them. Or a big thing I'm hearing about this semester is online like e-textbooks that come with the assignments and the quizzes. And when you think about it, like, you're paying to take the class. mm-hmm. when you do that. And that was kind of like insane to me how common that is.
These e-textbooks, so the e-textbooks don't come with the class? They like, they cost extra?
The, so it'll say like when you register for a class that a textbook is required. But I have a friend, she showed up her first day of class and she'd been waiting to either share a textbook with someone or rent a used one. And she had to get the e-textbook. But the e-textbook, it's the textbook and like the instructions, but it comes with 6 assignments and 6 quizzes. So gotcha. You're basically paying for another Canvas.
It's like all in one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've heard about that. A lot of like my more STEM type people deal with that a lot. It sounds like awful. Like it sucks.
It's actually crazy to me, especially like in math classes. Like I had to get one last semester and mm-hmm. like for math classes, like I'm a journalism major. Like I'm having to pay this much for a math class and film majors are having to pay all this kind of money for like a gen ed class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's stupid. Yeah, I mean, the thing that struck me most about the story was just like, obviously, like the whole college thing of like having to pay for, you know, $200 a semester for textbooks sucks. But then like all of the undisclosed stuff where it's like you said, like extra art materials that like, you know, spring up halfway through the semester or something, that seems pretty unprofessional to me.
I agree. And like, I feel like to a certain extent, like, you know, you come to Columbia as a fashion major or an art major, you're going to have to expect to purchase your own materials. But to an extent, you know, you look at tuition costs and it's materials, it's this, it's that, like, and you shouldn't, I feel like if you're expecting to pay for textbooks, you shouldn't be expected to pay for things that are required for you to participate in the course. And totally. If anything, like, you're going to have to pay for things, but that should be, like, disclosed way ahead of time, especially yeah. for college students. Like, someone getting hit with randomly having to drop $100 on a textbook, like...
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's, like, literally, like, undoable for a lot of yeah. people. Like, they can't deal with it. Yeah, I remember... I transferred here, and then the school I went to before Columbia, we, like, rented all of our textbooks. Like, the school just, like, rented them out to us for free, you know? And I remember feeling very fortunate about that, and then coming here and being like, man, like, I guess I'm, like, pirating these textbooks, you know? Like, because that really is, like, the only option for a lot of people.
Yeah, and a lot of people, like, have, like, specific ways that they're trying to get around it and purchase, you know, get a rent one or get a used one or get an older edition. But like the more requirements they're giving us, it's kind of harder to like limit the amount of money you're spending.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's one thing to have just a textbook, but if it comes with all of that extra stuff on top of it.
Yeah, and the thing about the online textbooks is usually like I had access to mine for 180 days. Like you're dropping $100 on something you're not going to use forever.
Yeah, that's ridiculous too. Any kind of like you're, like, you know, licensing the textbook for a period of time, is air quotes for all you listeners out there, is pretty stupid. That's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. Why is it important that we cover this?
I think that, you know, the Chronicle has a lot of, can get things done, I feel like. And I feel like you can't make everything free. That's just not realistic, but... I feel like if administration kind of heard the concern, maybe it would be a better system in place to let students know for this class, this semester, you're going to spend this much money. This is what you mm-hmm. need. This is where you can get it. Like, I feel like you can't give students too much information, especially when it comes to their money.
Totally. There's never enough, like, disclosing that you can do. I don't know if this is part of the story, but, like, are there any resources that students are using to sort of, like, get around this?
I'm kind of still looking into that. I know that I have been talking to the academic engagement librarian, and she works for this company called Carly, and basically, like, it's working on getting grants for free textbooks and free resources for college and students. And she said that they send out student surveys all the time, and that it's, a lot of students can look to it to find cheaper places to buy textbooks, rent things, a lot of different websites.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just throw in, like, you know, obviously, like, keep in contact with your fellow students. They're always really good plugs on that. Libgen.rs, I believe, is a good one. And, that's what I do. I think that's it. Is there anything else that feels, like, important to add for this story?
I feel like you pretty much covered all of it.
Great. Well, folks, that has... Oh, thank you so much for coming on, Vivian.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And that has been Chronicle Headlines for the week. Please listen to our News and Brief podcast. Please listen to our radio show on WCRX. Read the full stories on ColumbiaChronicle.com. This one is coming out in, what, a few days, next week maybe? Yeah, okay. And do all of that stuff. Yeah, thank you so much for listening. Thanks. Bye-bye.